Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. And nothing's going to be more positive than this. I didn't like the halftime band the weekend at Super Bowl. I was kind of making fun of it. Then the other day, like, that song came on, I can't feel my face when I, you know, so it was like this thing about smiling and being happy. And I think it might be about cocaine, but I'm just going to pretend it's PG-13. This next segment involves a guy who's one of my favorite people, one of my favorite Baltimore Positive people, one of the guys that I probably spent more time in actually Baltimore City than most other people. Usually my face hurting because he is my favorite comedian. And, you know, we're going to like have some fun, but like in the real world, we are friends. But in the real world, even friends during COVID, like I haven't like text Mickey and said, hey, what's up? Or
yeah,
hey, you want to get together and breathe on each other and not tell the authorities or anything weird like that. Mickey Cachell, I love you. How are you, man? What's going on, brother?
Nestor, thank you. I love you too, man. You know, things have been weird, my friend. You know that. It's a new world we're living in, trying to adjust. Before we go any further, though, I do want to ask and say how is your beautiful, amazing wife?
I'm glad you asked because, like, this plays right into the shtick, right?
Yeah.
So we just got a new sponsorship, and you know how important they are. With Wise Markets. We call them Intelligent Conversations, Mick. We're going to call them now Wise Conversations. So if I can ever get the chyron right?
Okay,
Wise Conversations. So my wife made me some delicious coconut chia seed pudding. So that's what I'm having while we're dining together, fresh fruits in here. So my wife is 7 years removed because we eat organic, as you can tell, like we're pretty organic people, right?
Yeah.
And my wife is actually doing a yoga retreat in Florida, got COVID tested. She's got her vaccine. She's on her way.
Yeah.
And she's like on a Flo-Yo float in Key Largo. She's spending a month with her mom in Florida. She hasn't seen her mom in 2 years. Her mom battled cancer like during all this. So like my wife has been on a yoga mat for 9 months, fit as a fiddle, like strong weights, doing stretching, doing classes, feeling awesome. And my friggin' back hurts. And my back has hurt for 100 days. And MOI, Maryland officers coming in here. I'm going to start standing when I do the show because my back hurts. So, I'm eating chia seed pudding. And I thought you would make me laugh. And you were on stage with the record. And in like I used to be on the guest list. And, you know, now I got to be like, well, I'm on private time with me. I need a private session with Mickey.
Well, Nestor, first of all, let me address one thing. You said your back hurts, which I think is very selfish because that woman has been carrying you since the day you met. Number one, she should
18
be
18 years ago. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. No, but dude, I think the world of her and you too. And I, you know, before we get into all this fun, I always take the time to say this. If anyone ever asks me about you or whatever, I admire you so much as a man and your love for your wife and the dedication you two went through all of her battles and watching it unfold on Facebook, because we can't be together every day and watching what you two went through all those years. I stand in awe of the love you two have. And I don't think enough people really understand that. And I paid attention and, your relationship has been at times for me a muse and something that's helped me realize that there is good in the world. So I just want you to know that as a
friend. Dude, I bring you on a friggin' make me laugh and you're going to make me cry while I eat chia seed pudding here and drink my Rofo coffee. I mean, come on, dude.
Well, no, it's
to bring me up, man. Come on.
That should bring you up. That should.
You know
bring
what
you
would
up.
Bring you up? My wife and I on our the 7 year date of her illness was March 20th, and I told Don Mueller, I said I want to give a free plug to this guy in this place because I just met him briefly and when my wife was battling, we were over at Hopkins, right? And you're familiar, Orleans and Broadway. Sure. You know, the Popeyes that's there, the I believe it's called Dimitri's, a little Greek diner with pizza. It's where my wife got a pizza when I thought she was going to die on Christmas Eve back in 2015. And, you know, she was so, so sick. And then she woke up on Christmas Eve and wanted pizza. And I'm like, where am I going to get a pizza at this hour? So, there's a place called Life O'Reilly right around the corner. And I used to go there kind of somberly alone and get a beer and a burger, like just to get out of the hospital and be away from you know, it just a walk, right? Yeah. And her dad would go there. Two doors down, there's an Argentinian restaurant, huge soccer, huge River Plate. It's called La Barrita. My wife and I went there just because on a recommendation from my friend Dave Shine, on a recommendation from a bunch of people. And like, we walk through the city all the time. Dude, the city's getting better, man. The city's like, we got to get people back down here and experiencing what's going on, and you know, the Ecobon and what's happening in Fells Point. And I'm telling you, man, like, so what for us, like living down here and getting out and experiencing spring after all of this, it's been sort of cleansing to get outside and experience some 60 degree days, you know?
Yeah, dude. But I just, you know, and we're going to have fun, but it's important for me to let you know that, because, you know, I don't think enough people in the world realize what a really great guy you are. I mean, you're like me. You're very opinionated. You say a lot of things that piss people off. You say a lot of things that people judge you about. But when push comes to shove, man, you're a good man. You're a guy I'd go to battle with. And I just think it's important to say that to people.
Well, I appreciate that. I mean, that's very kind of you and unexpected.
Yeah.
Especially as I'm sitting here eating chia seed pudding with organic,
I will say you're still totally unprofessional and do whatever the hell you want. I love you about that, is eating on air.
I wanted chia seed pudding in my teeth, figuring it would just open up all sorts. I'd bring you on to like beat me up, to like I bring a massage therapist in to like, you know, work on me a little bit in the corner. Yeah. You know, I'll never forget this, dude. I'm living in White Marsh in my single days, and you're on the radio, and my phone rang at like 6:50 in the morning. And like, it's my phone, you know, and I'm like,
yeah.
And it's some producer, this is Todd from 98 Rock. Morning. Well, what was your, you had a nickname for a guy that was like funny.
The douche. Yeah.
So a guy named The Douche calls me at 6:48 a.m. at a time when I didn't. I'm up at 3 a.m. now doing yoga you know, all this, right? Eating chia seed pudding.
Yeah.
And by the way, this is reduced fat because, you know, I mean, I can't go whole, right? So so the phone rings and it's Douche. Hey, this is Douche from 98 Rock with Mickey. Mickey wants you on the air. And I'm like,
yeah,
dude, hold on. I'm not even awake, right?
Right.
And I'm like, I know I'm going to get pinata'd. You know what I mean? I'm like, dude, it's 6, you know, and it's just in the era of the wacky morning zoo wake up call with Mickey and, you know, Amelia, whoever your posse or mafia was. I don't, you know.
Right.
So, and I thought to myself, Mickey's got pictures of me on Kane Street. Who knows, right? So and then I go on and you're like nice to me. This is like 20 years ago. And I'm like, man, you know, this is, you know, I don't know. It's like an Andrew Dice Clay thing. Like you calling me would be akin to like Harry Reasoner at 60 Minutes showing up saying, I'm Harry, I'm from 60 Minutes. We need to sit down and have a talk with you. And I'm like, oh my God, Mickey calling me out of the blue. But I called you because – look, Don Mohler produces a lot of the political stuff and the stuff that we traditionally do here at the end of the week.
Sure.
I'm still doing a lot of sports. I book on whomever, whatever. It's part of the Baltimore positive vibe. And I'm about to do this crab cake thing, and I'm thinking of people I want to have a crab cake with, and you're in the top, like, three.
Dude, I'd love to do it.
Yeah, so I'm doing all this cool stuff as we kind of come out of the plague. And he booked Brian Recker on last week, and he booked Jackie McCusker from Nacho Mamas, and Scunny and I were like, you know, blood brothers. Yeah. But I didn't really know Jackie or know her at. I've never had a conversation with her until we did it. But Brian Recker came on, and I want to encourage you and your audience, anyone who loves Brian, loves Paul, you know, anyone, Paul McCann, any of those folks. I mean, Brian was really, really. Like heartfelt. And I want, not that you wouldn't think that he would be, but I really want you to see about the last year of his life and what it meant to him, what it means to me, what it means to Kelly Bell, to all of us, right? I mean, you feed your family this way. I have massive respect in all every way, but getting people back on stage, Mick, I know you haven't listened to a whole lot of Baltimore Positive lately, but I have said a million times, I will feel whole again, when I'm on the lawn at Merriweather having a beer.
Right.
Like when that happens, we're cool. It's, you know, I mean, we're cool when I get back there and there's something I want to see. I don't even care what it is. I mean, it's something I want to see. that I'm going to feel good. And it's about music, man. Like, and I'm a sports guy and wherever. Sure. You know me from Hammerjack stuff. They mean they know me as a sports guy. You remember me as a music guy.
Yeah, totally, Nestor. I mean, you know, the one thing you hit on a couple things. First of all, let me talk about the record. I did my very first CD.
I'm going to mute and eat some chia seed pudding while you talk about the record, right? Because I don't want to be disrespectful to you.
When I, the first CD I ever recorded, Diary of a Short Man, I went to the record and did a CD release party. And we put, I can't remember, 400 or 500 chairs, just like a, you know, straight.
What year was that?
96, 97.
I mean, you've been short a long time, so I mean, it could be any time, right?
Yeah, I've been short the whole time, but I think this was maybe probably between 97, 98, somewhere
that's
around.
That's a long time ago. All right. I'm,
it was my first CD, and we did a CD release party, and I performed, and I did like sort of a cabaret show. I had a singer, I had a magician, I had another comedian, and then myself. And we sold it out. It was amazing.
There's and a joke in there. I'm leaving it alone. I saw that at wrestling once with Sky Lolo. Yeah. I'm going to leave that alone, Nick.
Very true. But, you know, man, the funny thing was that I fell in love with the record theater. It was a true rock and roll bar. It was a place I wanted to do my CD release party because I've always used the rock and roll image kind of thing for my comedy. And it made sense. And it was the first place I'd walked in since Hammerjacks where I felt like, wow, this is a rock and roll bar. And so that was my first experience there. My last experience was Saturday night, coming off of this, you know, this plague and not, you know, I've done a couple shows here and there. You know, I don't even talk about the financial devastation that it's caused, for not only me, but thousands of other performers, just being in a room where it was, you know, socially safe, all the distance stuff, still having 80 people in there, sold out. The room looks, I can't even explain how amazing it looks and the work they did to it.
I've shown pictures, like when I put the thing up with Brian, I showed the empty room. I'll pull that picture up off Baltimore Positive, but go ahead. We'll share that.
Yeah. It was the place is just unbelievable. The whole staff was so excited. It was exciting for me. You know, I'm a very, very low maintenance entertainer. You know, I walk in, whatever's in the green room, I'll deal with. I don't ask for anything. I never have. And just being there and feeling that love of appreciation. Yeah. I mean, look at that. It's unbelievable. But feeling the love and the appreciation for just having a live venue again was so unbelievable and so amazing. And Saturday night was spectacular. And, you know, I can't thank Paul and Brian and that and the whole record family for what they did and how special it made not only me feel, but everyone. And so I'm really, really happy for them. I mean, I'm happy for anybody right now that can open a door and have people entertain other people. You know, I've been an entertainer like you, Nestor, my whole life. I don't know how to do anything else, really.
Let me kiss your ass a little bit since you started with me earlier on. I mean, you and your brother and other people around you, and I know we share, you know, Bud Becker's pictures once in a while and other people. Sure. John Allen and I are going to go walking through the city this week because we're childhood friends and you know, do a little rock and roll and eat some food and catch up on life because we haven't done that in a year. Yeah. And, you know, there's all these roots to all of this. But, you know, I guess more than anything, like, you've always been around it and around other people who make their living like this, whether it's my dear friend Jill DeVille and, you know, working and you know, people we've known our whole lives. But everyone we've ever touched and you've given an opportunity. I mean, I remember you were managing a nightclub up in Falston hiring bands and saying, come on in, I'll give your band $250, $500, $1,000 and giving a chance to friends like Paul Lamanti, who used to cut my hair before. I figured I'm letting the hair flow. I figured I'm giving you openings right here, Mick.
Dude,
I got to admit
the hair actually looks great. It really does. You look good, man.
Well, I'm trying to like work backwards to the Hammerjacks thing. I told my wife, she saw the when Pennington cut it in 94. It was a bit of a mullet, right? Like you remember that.
I had one.
Oh, dude, somewhere there's a picture of you and me in like Queensryche together or something that Keith Van Doren took back in the day. The Shooter Man, a little shout out there. Mickey Coachella is my guest, or I'm his guest. I'm not sure. I got chia seeds from Wise Markets in my teeth as my new sponsor. I'm probably not showing so well. Mick, let's go back to this, because like you again, around everyone in the industry, and Paul Manna, you know, my Rush Blood brother.
Yeah.
Hiring people, cutting the pie, selling beer, tipping bars, you know, like all of this industry that happens in and around an event, whatever the event is. Give me the last year of your life. Like, catch me up on, like, my wife's going to ask, and I'm going to say, go watch the damn video at Baltimore Pop.
Right.
My wife's going to say, what's Mickey up to, you know?
Right.
And like, I literally, like, bring me up to speed. Where were you a year ago?
So a year ago, I basically had a little company where I was doing like home improvement stuff and painting, and I had been doing it for a couple of years and I liked it.
Dude, I need a job for serious.
Yeah,
I do. I got a little lighting, a little drywall issue. Can you help me? Seriously.
I can come help you out, buddy. Don't worry about that.
Jeez, I got a list of all the stuff I got to do here. I'm just going to take it off the list. So that's great. Thank you. Good.
And you know what happened was I was doing it. I was surviving. I got three kids. I'm divorced, you know, single dad at times, got my kids half the time. And kind of going through, I wouldn't call it a midlife crisis, but really kind of soul searching. And I realized, you know what, man, this is my life, and I gotta, you know, take care of my kids and myself. And I was full blown. And then all of a sudden the plague hits, and it was really strange for me because.
And what was your career as you saw it last March? Cause I think all of us have had a trajectory change, right? Like I've had nothing but business owners on talking about building drive-thrus last April, you know, I mean, learning curbside service, figuring out how to take French fries and send them a takeout. They don't take out well, right?
Well, it's very interesting that you say that, because
the pivot, as we would call it, right?
Yeah. So for me and what I was doing, got insanely busy. All of a sudden, home improvement stuff went through the roof. People were home. They had some expendable income. Even though they weren't working, the government's giving them money. They thought, hey, it's free money. And the people started doing a lot of work around the house, and I got busy. And as I'm doing this, and I'm, you know, financially I'm doing good, or starting to get really better. And then one day I wake up, Nestor, and I'm like, okay, but this is not what I'm supposed to be doing. Like, I can do it, but it doesn't mean it's what I'm supposed to be doing. So I had a soul search, and an opportunity presented itself around the first of the year, and or a little after the first of this year, and I took it. And basically, a really, really brilliant man, Paul Wanger, who owns Flagship Cinemas, the entire corporation, which has multiplex cinemas up and down the East Coast from, I think, Maine to Florida, 20 cities. He has one here. He's from he's a Baltimore guy, grew up in Highlandtown. And he's a brilliant man. And he decided during the crisis, he was going to take his biggest theater and build a live performance theater. And Nestor, when I say that it is top notch, amazing, giant stage, huge seating area, unbelievable sound and lights. I mean, he just did it. He put his money where his mouth is. He did the work. Brought me in this kind of like in the beginning just to ask some questions about booking things. I saw this theater and it was like an epiphany, Nestor. I said, I want in. And I joined forces and I am the program director for the entire theater now. I'll be performing here April 9th and 10th. We have
Where is this now? Give me locale. Like, give me a website. Give me some place to find some stuff, bud.
So you can go to fpxevents.com.
fpxevents.com. I'm there.
Yeah. And it's basically, they built this. Originally, it was going to be a magic theater. They were going to do high-end magic shows. In fact, the opening weekend, April 2nd and 3rd, there's an incredible act here called Scott and Puck. Scott Alexander is a he is a world-class magician, along with his partner, Puck. They'll be performing here April 2nd and 3rd. The illusions and tricks are absolutely incredible. It is so worth every bit of time. Yep, that's it there. If you go up the tickets, you'll see that different acts come up. Nestor, it's unbelievable what this thing is. I'd love for you to come over one day. I'll give you the tour and you can see it. I mean, it's incredible.
I'm thinking like Hammer Jack's Inner Harbor Concert Hall. That up when it pulls up. But Mickey Cachell is our guest here on Baltimore Positive. We're talking about positive things. Give me vibe about Wrecker the other night, getting back on stage. I saw the pictures of Kelly Bells. People shared some stuff. And, you know, I don't know Kelly, and I should. I mean, I don't say I'm in or out of the music business, but I think now that I'm stepping, you know, toes back into trying to do all things Baltimore, getting to know the new kids coming up like Kelly, you know, it would be great. But, I mean, this was how you made a living, sitting and talking to comedians and rock stars and wannabe rock stars and people doing good things in the city and you know, living on a calendar of, much like me, March Madness and opening day and the Preakness and the Masters and things going on in our lives. Right. And
the other night, Nestor, was unbelievable. I mean, it was Magoobies Joke House. Andrew at Magoobies, Andrew Unger, has done a great job of keeping the place open. And I've played there a couple times. So I've had that sort of thing. The record was special in that it was such a marquee venue for so long. And I mean, I saw, you know, one of my favorite artists ever is Mike Ness from Social Distortion. And I saw them there. And, you know, the acts I saw at the record were unbelievable. Like I said, it was the first place I ever did a CD release party. So it meant a lot to me. So the other night when I walked on that stage, it was surreal. Having Kirk McEwen open up for me was incredible. He's my blood brother. Half the reason of any of my success is his, is his doing. And, you know, he is amazing. He was great. To get on that stage, I did about an hour and 20 minutes probably, and it was just incredible. Everybody there had a great time. It was just unreal. I'm so proud of Paul and the Wrecker brothers and family for what they did. It was amazing. I don't know how else to put it. It was one of those moments I won't forget for a long time.
Dude, in the era of like COVID and Trump and where we are and doing comedy, where are you with writing comedy at this point? Like art form, you know, I've told you many times, I've said here on the air, I joke with my wife all the time. If this didn't work out, I'd like to give that a stab. You always tell me I should do it. I don't even know where the etiquette, you know, where the line would be. And by the way, I want to pull up your theater here. You talk a little bit about comedy.
Well, you know, the thing about comedy for me has always been to be honest, to be truthful, to be observant. I do think the days of just blatantly, you know, saying something, you know, I don't call it an easy joke because writing jokes aren't easy. They're easy for comedians.
Say you have stuff on the internet that if it pulled up today and you said it today, you couldn't say it. Right.
Yeah,
like
of course.
Comedian has that. And that's the whole gotcha, you know, cancel call, all of that's going on. And I think it makes comedy harder. And I think comedy's more necessary than ever, even though you haven't made one chia seed joke the whole time we've been together.
Listen, Nestor, if anybody is going to eat cheese and has survived from being cheesy, I think it's the guy eating the bowl of cheese seeds right now.
Chia, like your hair, chia.
Hey, this hair is all real, baby. It's all real.
But it is like a chia.
Yeah, well, I don't know
what the hell this is, like a wildfire going on here. No, writing jokes about stuff other than my hair, you know what I mean?
Yeah, like
making fun of the girl in the front row and her boobs and, you know, all that, like the Andrew Dice Clay thing. Like, I don't even know what I could or couldn't get away with in regard to dropping an F-bomb. You know what I mean? Yeah, literally.
Well, I mean, I said a lot of those the other night. I talked about, you know, things that are in the world. I think if comedians are getting afraid to address what's happening in society for fear of what they say, banning them, then they should stop doing comedy. I'm not afraid. No one can cancel me but me. They can stop coming to see me, you know, but I'm not canceled. You know, I'm going to say what I think. I always have. I always think or thought that I have a pretty good idea of what the barometer is. I've made, you know, have I stepped over the line? Sure, I have. But I think all risk takers step over the line. You know, I think anybody that's worth their salt should step over the line sometimes, just to remind you if nothing else, that there's a line there. You know, I'm also not above apologizing if I did or said something that truly was wrong. You know, whether I was mad at the moment or not thinking or being careless, I'm not above apologizing. And, you know, I could have gone and taken down things that I have on the internet that probably would get me, quote unquote, canceled. But I also said that's not being honest. That's being a hypocrite. You know, I said it then. If there's a consequence for me saying something 20 years ago, then there's a consequence. But it's not going to change who I am as an artist. It's not going to change who I am as a comedian. And I think there's a difference. I think people are starting to realize about intent. I think intent is finally getting its fair due. It's going to be a slow go, but I think people are finally looking at this like, that's not what they meant. You know, that is not what they meant. You're taking someone's words and applying their intention, and it's not fair, and that's dangerous. And I will fight it till the end. And if, you know, I say a joke, and someone says I'm a misogynist afterwards, well, then they're an idiot. I can't fight somebody's imagination. You cannot battle imagination. So therefore, I'm not afraid of it. And nothing's going to change my overall approach to comedy. Well, are there words now that I say, okay, I see that it does hurt. I see that it's unnecessary. So yeah, I won't use those words. But I think a lot of words are still fine that people are saying you can't say, or, you know, a lot of things are just getting so blown out of proportion. I mean, Dr. Seuss, I mean, Jesus Christ, when is a 5-year-old considering whether or not racial equality is important? I mean, it's absolute insanity to me. And we have to stop looking at pop culture to educate our kids. You know, I mean, my job is not to influence your child. Your job as a parent is to influence your child. Not me.
Didn't Charles Barkley say that back in like 95? Remember that?
Yeah, and he was ridiculed for it. And he was 100% right. He's not a role model. He's a basketball role model. His job is to play basketball as good as he can. That's his job. My job is to tell jokes as good as I can. And if you're calling me saying your 11-year-old was in the car listening to a morning show where I had a girl sitting naked called Jugs for Plugs, and you were offended for your child, well, you're a horrible parent. Why are you letting your child listen to that? That's on you. You know, if my child was watching porn, I wouldn't call the porn star and yell at her.
Listen, man, I've seen you in a club with your shirt off. You are adult programming. Believe
yes,
me, you're not made for children, Mick.
No, I'm not even made for some adults, and it's fine with me. It's totally fine with me. You know, Nestor, I love what I do. I mean, I love it, and I've brought a lot of joy.
What are you doing now? So you still do, you know, like from the comedy standpoint,
yeah.
Is there a tour? I mean, like I know you have been on Sirius and the internet's big and whatever.
Yeah.
Like, is it something where like you really aspire to go Philadelphia, New York, Boston and do something like that, you know, in the next year?
So along with this theater project that I started, not started, I should not say that, this theater project that I joined up with.
Where is the theater, by the way?
Literally across the street from East Point Mall on Eastern Avenue behind Bob Bell Chevrolet. Flagship Cinemas. It's a giant movie complex.
Dude, do you know, let me give you a little Baltimore thing here as I rinse my mouth. Something very, very momentous in my life happened in that space, okay?
Oh, I got to hear this. Mm-hmm. First,
well, you knew I grew up 2 blocks away, right? So, like,
Can I guess the momentous experience?
Go ahead.
First time you seriously got your ass kicked.
No. That plaza down there was always, well, first it was Charlie Irish Chevrolet back in the day when I was a boy.
Yeah.
And the Eastern Stainless Steel sort of sat behind there. But when I was a boy, it was the Lionel Kitty City toy store when I was a little boy. And there was a name even before that. It's when they did Smash 'Em Up. How old are you, Mick? I'm born in 68. Are you older or
me
younger
too.
Than me?
68.
What month?
November.
Oh, I'm a month older than you. Okay, I was born October 6th. So we are exactly the same age. So this is 1973, 74, 75, okay?
Right.
Who do you think was the biggest celebrity in my life in 1973, 74, 75, being a Baltimore kid? So I'm giving you a little bit of a Baltimore positive clue, all right?
Brooks Robinson.
Close. I met him at East Point Mall, Hoschel Cones, and he signed third base as my home. Very,
Johnny
very
Unitas.
No, Johnny very good Unitas. Answer. Very good answer. So here's the deal. Lionel, Kitty City on a Saturday morning. It was five bells for Captain C and Moan D to C. I kind of look like Moan D to Sea Monster here, right? When my when my wise milk, you know, goes in and out of the shot, it's like when Moan D didn't get the or Bruce the Bird or whatever. Yeah. So Captain Chesapeake was signing autographs. Yeah. In literally, I'm going to pull this up right now. All right, this is a Baltimore positive, true Baltimore positive moment. Baltimore. This is the space. This is the theater. This when I was a boy, that structure. Wow. Was a toy store, and my dad always wanted a train garden, right? And he always had an incredible train garden and trees and like all the Legos. You know, when I was a Lego kid, 73, 74, 75, we did all of our kid store shopping there. Yeah. I always wanted the Rock'em Sock'em things, and I always wanted the one of the hop things. They always lied to me, said they were going to sand it and bring it. But nonetheless, I met Captain C there. How about that? And you know what? I asked him a question, and I remember this because I'm like Mary Lou Henner. I asked Captain C how deep the water was under the Bay Bridge. Because that's the kind of kid, that's the kind of five-year-old I was. I love it.
Well, so Nestor, you'll appreciate this. About the same year, might have been a year or two later, Glenmont Elementary School on Walther Boulevard, Captain Chesapeake, they had a big carnival there. And Captain Chesapeake came and was signing autographs, same thing. And I walk up to him. And he, you know, how are you, young man? And I'm so happy to meet Captain C. And he looks at me and he says, anything you want to ask me? And dead serious with, I mean, this was a sincere question. I said, will Gilligan ever get off the island? And that was almost.
That's way better than my question.
No. That was almost his response. He had this big laugh. He rubbed my head and he said, you be good, kid. And
listen, wouldn't that be the greatest thing? Like when you said that you dropped too many F-bombs and had too many topless women in the studio, you know, remind me to tell you about the time the capuchin monkey came in the studio and pick-fettered me, okay? I got pictures of that, too. It's a good March Madness story. But like you said, it's not for children, right?
Yeah.
Like if your whole life is doing nothing but meeting kids and you're Santa Claus, whatever that would be, the thing you can always say to a kid is ask them something and they're going to say something
that's amazing.
Really funny. Or just like something that an adult would never say to you, no matter what, right? And there's where your comedy lies, right?
Sure. I mean, listen, when I was a little kid, Nestor, my family, you know, we're Irish and Italian. And so you have this love of life, this love of the arts that comes from the Italians. I mean, they love everything. They love art. They love music. They love acting. They love their family so much. They love their religion so much. It's everything is love. And in the Irish families, it's a little more pessimistic. It's a little more, I don't know about that. It's a little more kind of, I want to tell you I love you, but I don't know how that's going to affect me. And that's how the Irish are. You know, they have a great passion. They love each other greatly. They stick together and they're fighters in a good way. I'm not saying that in a bad way at all. And ironically, when you combine these two, you have this love for life and this love for everything around you, but you also have this ability to look and say, oh, you know what? That's total bullshit. That's completely a lie. That you see hypocrisy so fast. And when you combine those two, it's hilarious because you want to love something, but you can find every reason not to. And usually your reasons not to are really just your way of saying, let's please change this so I can love what I think is lovable.
Oh, and look, man, now you're getting into deep soul stuff and, you know, deep harmony stuff where you're talking.
It's about my art. It's about my art, man. It's how I do it.
Yeah,
it's
man. I mean, it's got to come from the soul, right?
No doubt. If it's any good, it does.
Well, I mean, no doubt about it. And that's why people pay and come out and see you and you make me laugh. And you know what I mean? I love my friends at Royal Farms. You know that. I mean, they've sponsored me a long time. Best fried chicken. It's up the street from me. But listen, I miss Burks. I miss Burks. I miss the comedy club. I miss the onion rings. By the way, man, Burks onion rings, right?
The greatest.
Okay, so yeah. I haven't had one. When they were closing down, I went and I found an old black and white picture. It's when I was a little heavier, you know, back in like 05, 06, they shut down. As my wife took this very dark picture of me out in front of the Burke sign as it was closing down, and I thought, never again. I was on a trip to Kansas City, a place called Jack Stack, and I looked next to me, some Ravens fans at the bar about 2 years ago, and they were serving the same onion ring, right? And I felt like there's hope. So when I'm in Kansas City, I can have it. Last summer, my wife and I went on a bender. And speaking of, you know, Irish holidays, at least there's one hangover we didn't have last week, right? So that we had to apologize for on Sunday. There's the Italian in you that's in me. So we went on a bender through the city. We were over with Juan Webster over at the Pendry. A person that bought me a drink that wasn't supposed to buy me a drink because he wasn't out of the purple bubble that Kirk knows about. But that it was a birthday. And so I had tequila and a couple drinks, Ed Lauer at the Admiral's Cup. And I wind up at Roost Chris at like 10 o'clock, really hungry. And I look at the table and there was like that moment. Somebody else at the outdoor table had ordered like onion rings, and I'm sitting at Roost Chris, and this is my sponsor forever, and I'm like, it ain't there forever, and I'm like, I've never seen onion rings on a menu, I've never seen them on a table, I've never seen them served, they've never come anywhere, I've never smelled them, and I'm like, oh my God, I ordered them, and I'm sitting at Roost Chris, and I'm having, you know, I had a couple of beverages, and I'm like eating these onion rings, dipping them in ketchup, and having like a moment thinking I'm about to come upstairs after a frosted Mick, you know, goblet that they serve there, maybe a little crab melt, you know, and on the English muffin. And I'm going to come upstairs and I'm going to like die laughing and stumble home the way we used to do it here when I moved downtown. And we would literally, you were like the Rolling Stones in our, I mean, I'm not kissing your ass too much because I mean, you already started with me, but like literally those days, we missed that so much. We would literally, come on, dude, we'd see you 8-10 times a year at Burke's, right?
No
literally.
Doubt. I've told a lot of people that, Nestor, you know, there are people I think back on in this town that have made great names for themselves. You, Kirk McEwen. I could go on and on and drop names all day, and I don't want to. I just want to make the point that I've been so fortunate and so lucky that people that I'm a fan of, like yourself, I have always been a Nestor fan, that you're fans of mine as well, is almost hard for me to kind of really put into perspective.
We were two dopes sitting backstage at Hammerjacks. Yeah. What the hell did you even do? What were you doing at Hammerjacks? What was your job?
I booked a lot of those bands after Bud. When Bud left, that was my job.
Were you there before Bud, though?
I was there with Bud. And then, so what I did was like, Bud would do all the national stuff, and then Bud would call me and say, Mickey, I need an opener for this or that. And then my real job.
So you dealt with Jack Dean booking Child's Play, basically?
Well, no, that level of local bands Bud handled, or Louie. But like I would do all the opening acts. They didn't feel like dealing with that crap. So they would call me and say, we need an opening act for this or that. And I would do it. But my real job there was kind of like the hype man. Louie had sobered up. Louie had gotten clean. And he was kind of trying to become more of a businessman and not be the mouth of the place. And he saw a lot of energy. He saw that I didn't drink, really. He saw that I didn't do drugs and that I was insane. And he put me on top of bars and had me throwing beers out, or put me on stage and get everybody all riled up. And he loved it. And it was just the way that my career started. And
When's the first time you ever stood on a stage doing comedy? Was that at Hammerjacks?
I mean, I knew you at Falston
and you were still running clubs and booking good bands up there, man.
That was actually after Hammerjacks, believe it or not.
That was before comedy.
No. I'd taken a break from comedy. So here's how it started, Nestor. I started doing comedy at 16 at the Bowman Theater. I used to ride a skateboard up Harford Road. It's about 7 miles from where I lived, 8 miles. And I'd ride my skateboard up and I would sneak in. And the owner, Bill Sullivan at the time, had a brother, Paul, who was the manager. And Paul...
By the way, Bill invested in a skipjack. So shout out to Sullivan, man. Yeah, you know.
Bill, one of the greats, man.
Bill kept hockey here for my childhood. Lost money doing it, but God bless you, Bill. Thank you.
Bill was one of the greats of this town, no doubt. But his brother Paul saw me walk in there one night, and he walked right up to me, and he goes, and I had a skateboard, Nestor, literally in my hand. And I walked in, and it was the first time I ever walked in there, and he said, what are you doing? And I said, I want to see the comedy show. And he goes, how old are you? And I just looked blankly. I didn't know what to say. I didn't even know you had to be a certain age. And he said, are you 18? And I just shook my head. No, he said, go stand in that back corner and don't move all night. And I did exactly what he told me. I leaned against my skateboard and I watched stand-up comedy at 16 years old. I knew I wanted to do it.
That's what Bud Becker told me when he and Louie let me into Hammerjacks when I was the Evening Sun critic.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Go
exactly.
Stand in the corner. How right. And Brillhart's in the other room playing all right. The music. And Brillhart and I were like in homeroom together with Tom Bliss at Dundalk High. So it was like me and Brillhart hanging out. Brillhart would be like, hey, have you heard the new Steelheart, man? Let me put it on for you.
No, you're
Tesla, 100%. Man. Tesla's doing this acoustic thing, dude. It's going to be hot, you know?
The ironic part of that story is there was a headliner that night, a guy named Nick Cosentino from Boston. And he walked up to me after the show. And this was an 8 o'clock show and he had a 10 o'clock show as well. And he said, what are you doing here? And
who
I was like,
played there that got really famous.
No, a bunch of guys that played there that blew up. I'm trying to think.
Who did you see there that got a television show? I mean, did Seinfeld ever step on the stage? I mean, like literally that might have happened, right? I mean, like.
I don't know if Jerry did. I know Chris Rock did.
There you go. All right. But, I knew there was a lot of people that played there for sure.
Yeah. I'm Dave Chappelle, Wanda Sykes, Martin Lawrence. I mean, dude, it's.
And this was before, like, anything happened downtown. And like Camden Yards came, kind of sort of. Camden Yards kind of changed all 92, 90. Well, then like comedy came to downtown.
No, this is 85, 86.
Well, it's the only place comedy existed. It was the Laugh Factory of Baltimore, right? At the time.
That was there. But what I'm talking about was the Bowman, Tracy's Comedy Club.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah. So the Comedy Factory opened, I think, a year after that. And then you had Water Street, which was owned by a guy named Bob Summerby and Dan Rosen. And Summerby, to this day, is one of the greatest comedians I've ever seen. He did The Tonight Show. And these guys, really, they're the ones that got the big acts in. They're the ones that, I saw Bill Hicks there. I saw Dice. I mean, dude, it was unbelievable.
Baltimore had to have a place to put that on, right?
Yeah,
And the way that the Capitol Center used to get the big acts, and sometimes we didn't get them here, people would – you'd have to go to D.C. to see Jimmy Walker or, whoever's playing back then.
Yeah, and it was amazing for me. I mean, I've worked and made friends with some people today that, are as big as they get in comedy. And it was an incredible, incredible learning ground for me. I mean, it's,
So you had done that when I met you at Hammerjacks, you had already like been on a stage telling jokes. Okay.
Oh my God. Yeah. I started telling jokes at 16.
So throwing the stuff out at Hammerjacks was like just part of working the crowd for you. Okay.
I think it blew Louie away that I was so comfortable on stage and so comfortable in front of people, but it was because I started doing comedy at 16.
Dude, when you're from Baltimore and you're from East Baltimore, 50 people in the crowd every night. You know what
easy,
I mean?
Easy.
Yeah, there was never a show at Hammerjacks where when I walked out through people, and it wasn't because like I was the famous music critic guy. Right. Or nobody would know who I was.
Because you were Nestor from Dundalk and guys you grew up with.
Yeah, in the same way they knew Brillhart, in the same way you and I knew the same girls from, Catholic High or from Curly or, whatever it would be, right?
Yeah, 100%.
You played sports. I mean, you just did things. You knew them from the beach or whatever. Mickey Cacciello, who I've known most of my life, is telling jokes again. How often are you out telling jokes now?
So it's now as it's picking up and people want to start doing shows, I'm booking stuff. I'm booked at FPX Theater April 9th and 10th. If you and the wife get a chance, if you feel safe coming out, please let me know, dude. I'd love to host
you. I can't tell you. I don't know where it is.
Well, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Go to your childhood home and turn around.
Dude, if you get me wrecked, I'll have to crash on my kids, walk of shame. Wouldn't be the last walk of shame up Eastern Avenue.
No, that's the truth, man. But this place, Nestor, if nothing else, come over during the day this week or something, and let me just give you a tour of what's happening. I'm so excited about this. I mean, we built a studio here that is incredible. I'm also getting into the podcast business heavily. I don't miss radio, but I do miss talking and entertaining people. And, watching you do your thing over these years and watching other people, and I know I'm good at talking and entertaining people, and I'm going to do it, and I'm going to do it in a unique way. And I'm really, really, really excited about things in the future. So to go back real quick, you asked me where I was a year ago. I was, you know, doing, you know, basically home improvement stuff and happy and making money. And then I just, you know, I did a little soul searching around the end of the year, January, and realized this is not who I am. I mean, I can do it, but I'm just not happy inside.
You mean 2 months ago, you realized this?
Yeah. And I finally decided I'm committing. And if I lose everything by committing, at least I die. If I die broke and penniless, I'll say I did it my way, so to speak. But I don't think I will. And I'm, you know, I'm just honored you asked me to be on your show and get the word out. But I really want people to check out this theater, FPX Theater. Just go to fpxevents.com. You'll see all the upcoming
shows. I'll
pull
it up right now. I'm going to pull it up for everybody to take a look. If you just dropped into the podcast or video cast, it looks big league here, man. Looks like the kind of stage. And the, you know, and obviously from a social distance, you could open this thing sort of slowly and give it some training wheels, get it going, right?
That's exactly what we're doing. We're opening to a limited capacity for these shows. We can basically curtain off the room so it's only half as big.
That's too high class for Dundalk. Come on.
No, you know what's great, man, is it makes sense when you're in the room. It really does.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm just giving you a hard time because I can meet Captain C there, I can meet you there. How about that?
Hey, I'm the new Captain C, Coachella. You know what I mean?
You know, it makes me want to sing that song. Oh, man. You know, it's three bells. Time for the Flintstones. For Three Stooges. We got two Stooges here, right?
Yeah, exactly. Now, Nestor, let me ask you a couple questions.
Geez. Here we go.
No,
you make me cry again? We started with that.
No. You know, when NST comes up or people talk about you, there is a, like me as well, there is a love-hate relationship that people have with people like us. Have you ever concerned yourself with the people that go, that guy's an ass, he just talks out of his ass or whatever? Or do you focus on the people that come up to you and say, you know what, dude, you crack me up, you make me laugh, you get me through the day? Do you let the bad stuff get to you still?
I don't think you can do this and not have Rex Ryan used to say skin like an armadillo.
Yeah.
You know, and he used to say something else. It was really great. We don't coach effort around here, you know?
Right. Yeah.
And you know, for me, for former employees and stuff, I'll just say this, no one ever out efforted me at WNST.
No question.
So, you know, that's just where it's at. And for the people that hung around, they hung around long enough to show some semblance of effort. But in the end, I own an AM radio station, right? Like if I haven't evolved, if I haven't pivoted, I walked in 15 years ago. I said the internet, even though I hated message boards, because the message boards were the first place of anonymity where a sponsor would hear that, you know, whatever, make up the awful lie that's not true about said public figure. In a defenseless way. And then all of a sudden said lie becomes phone booth, you know, that quite frankly leads to the presidency we saw the last 4 years.
Sure.
So for me, seeing this at the turn of the century, instead of running from the internet, I ran toward the internet and thought, this is a wall where we're going to be able to tell our story in our way, bringing along people. I was really naive to a lot of things, right? I mean, I would say at the beginning, I did this because I loved baseball. I loved the Orioles. I loved Baltimore and the Orioles. Sure. And that's why I even ever got involved in doing this. You know that from the time at Hammerjacks, right?
Yeah.
So, and then I saw an industry around it where the Orioles came and then the Ravens miraculously existed. I mean, dude, I was telling a story about the Dolphins Saints game a couple weeks ago, you know, where we had no prayer of ever getting a team. And now look at it. So, I mean, I've seen the city get up and keep a baseball team and build a stadium and then attract the football team and then win two championships. So like I've lived through all of this, but I've also lived through Freddie Grang, what my wife's been through. And even then AM radio, it had to go somewhere else. So in 7 and 8, I walked in and I said, we're going to become a web company and we're going to tweet and we're going to Facebook and we're going to break stories and we're going to get news and we're going to deliver on the Coons Ford tech service, breaking news and injuries and all these things. that, you know, there were some people in my place. It's like, oh, well, that's like more work than doing radio. I mean, that's, right. You know, oh, I got to write a blog. I don't write well. Well, learn how to write, dude. You get out of 10th grade. So if you can't do that at the level that you need to do, you won't have an audience. You know that. Yeah. If your jokes suck, if I come out and see you and I'm like, this isn't the Mickey I saw at Burke's, you know, like, hey, Mick, take your shirt off. Come on. You know? Right. So I don't feel like at this point talking about the Orioles 15 years after they took my press pass, they've basically said to me, we don't want you around. Right. Like literally, you know, the Ravens thing's been different because after the knee and Wembley and now Lamar and all of the original people are gone. I turn around in 5:13. I don't know anybody anymore.
Right.
And they need to attract new people. That's going to be on them. And whether someone like me can either be involved or not involved, but I got a lot of blood on the bricks with the Ravens and with sports. Yeah. But what really happened, you know, with me was when my wife got sick, I started talking about charity stuff. And there goes my hero. We went and swabbed 8,000 people on a tour that my wife almost died. And Bill Cole from Cole Roofing, here, I got the coffee cup. There's no more. Bill hit me and said, hey, dude, I like those segments. You should do more community and charity stuff. And Mick, look, dude, you did a million jokes with comedians, famous people, whatever. Sure. But be honest. I mean, the stuff you probably did with Special Olympics or something you did at a blood drive or some cancer survivor. I mean, even you talking about my wife at the beginning of this, those are the things that once you get into your 50s start to matter. So the football players don't want to come and do my show. You know what I mean? Right. The baseball players don't know who I am. Right. So why not have Jackie McCusker on and tell her story about my love of her husband?
Yes, sir.
Have Brian Recker on, or have Mickey Cachell on, or have the owner from La Burrita on and talk about his incredible food, or have the hospital presidents, or have the politicians who we're holding accountable. I mean, Brandon Scott and I are going to go get a crab cake at Coco's next month, you know? I mean, so like, we're trying to lift the city is what we're doing, dude.
Let me tell you something. Hey, guys like you and I who are from this city, adore this city, and are part of this city, we are the community. I've always looked at athletes and out-of-town entertainers as just that. Not that these athletes don't care about the community, not that they're not important, but we've lived here our whole lives. It's our job, I believe, as men who have been lucky enough to, and women, because there's others, that have been lucky enough to grow up here, that have been lucky enough to call Baltimore their home. You know, I'll give an example. A lot of people give me flack about my adoration for former Mayor Stephanie Rawlings Blake. Now, I don't say that from a political point of view. We disagree on a lot of things, her and I. But having talked to her in private, having spent a little moment with her, just sitting talking, we talked about shared experiences as kids. We talked about, you know, different things around town we did separately, but didn't even know we were doing it together. And she cares about this city. And when you get to a certain level like that, you have to make decisions that make some people think you don't care.
Well, this thing happened with Moeller and I in the Upper Deck. You know, Moeller was my high school guidance counselor, right?
Right.
I mean, Moeller got me into my first journalism class and told me I was going to be the next Chris Thomas.
Right.
So that's how long I've known Moeller. We sit together at the games. Now, all of a sudden, he's got a piece in his ear and like he's running the county when Kevin died. Right. And I said to Don, like, I was pissed at government. I was pissed forget Sheila. I mean, Kathy's running the city. Nothing works. Like I live, you know, and this is after Freddie Gray. And I said to Don, I'm like, does anybody care to live? I mean, who cares? You know what I've learned in 2 years of Baltimore Positive, dude? A lot of people care. And there's a lot of good people in this city.
No doubt.
Of good people in this city. And you talk about Stephanie, and she and I have had our differences. I mean, and I invited her for coffee and she blew me off. I just wanted to talk to her about making the city better. She, you know, I gave her a card, never heard from her. So that's my story with Stephanie. But, you know, I cheered for her and I voted for her, by the way.
Right.
So there.
Yeah. You know, and I'll tell you something, man. You know, when we get to this age, Nestor, and we've, you know, we have a family, we have our lives. not only ahead of us, but we also have a whole life behind us now. And when we look back, you're able to see the BS that comes with all of it. When you see these people talk on television, you and I have been around these people so long. We've been around the system so long. We've been around the interactions of how things actually work and get done, the movers and the shakers. And because we're talent and entertainers, they're attracted to us. So we get access to people that most would not. And you're smart like me. You see the bullshit with certain people. You see the necessity that they have to live under, the things they have to say and do just to keep their empires alive. And you know what? At the end of the day, I respect it.
But it's incredible to me that you would publish an illicit book and backdoor it out and think like you're going to go live in a $1 million house the rest of your life and not go to prison. Like to me, that is, you know, I thought about running for mayor last year, Mickey. You know, I put together like a whole thing. I had 40 pages. If Sheila had won, I was going to run. I told the whole world that. Yeah. And to your point, do I care what people think? I care that I get off a plane everywhere I go around the world, Mick, right?
Yeah.
With Baltimore, an Oriole hat, a Raven hat, purple.
Yeah.
And people used to say to me, oh, Baltimore, Cal Ripken, I had a crab cake there, Camden Yards. Or my family, wife's family, Camden Yards, whatever, right? And now it's, oh, The Wire, bang, bang, whatever. And look, David Simon's my friend. We had Justin Fenton on last week. You know, I've had Soderbergh and those guys on talking about the Gun Trace Task Force. That dude was from Essex, right? Middle River, right?
Yeah.
So, like, these awful things that have happened here. But, dude, you're a soccer guy. Have you seen what's happened in Medellin, in Colombia? Have you seen what happened in Detroit? I mean, you fix places, and places get fixed from within.
Yeah.
And, you know, I believe this is about the people here who want to fix it. And, you know, and I'm not just talking about the baseball team or the Inner Harbor or crime or any one issue. I do see that. And I've been having these people on the show. I mean, go talk to Felicia Porter. Go listen to Brandon Scott. I mean, these are people who are waking up every day and giving from what I believe to be an honest effort to try to make the city better. And for that, I want to give him a chance, and I got the rainbow up here, Mick.
Dude, listen, you know, listening to you
talk about the leprechaun joke there somewhere.
there is an unbelievable amount of love and pride that people take in Baltimore. But, you know, I've always said this, Nestor, and I know you'll agree with it. The thing I really love about Baltimore is we love to say the word Baltimore. But if we're talking to another Baltimore person and someone says, where are you from? We don't say Baltimore. We say the neighborhood we grew up in. And I think that is so.
Do you say Highland Town?
No, I'm a Hamilton kid.
You're a Hamilton guy.
Yeah, right. Actually, I'm Lauraville, right below Hamilton, little Herring Run Park. And you know,
man, I spent most of my childhood on Tyndale, right across from Berkshire, across from Herring Run. You know, Tyndale, Eastwood Drive.
Do I know it? I was born on Berkshire Drive.
So you're right around the corner from where O'Malley lived for years.
Yeah.
You know, I had an ex-girlfriend, Carrie, lovely, lived around the corner. Right at Coco's, for crying out loud, right?
Yeah.
Wow, man. And I grew up in the attic in Tyndale. When I wrote last summer, you know what? Dave Geller challenged me last summer to write my favorite music. When that was going around on Facebook, you know, pick 10 albums on the island or whatever. I did 31 albums in the month of May because it got out of hand.
Yeah.
But the first album I ever listened to, the first time I fell in love with music was in the attic on Tyndale Road, listening to Kiss Alive 1 and Cher and Black Betty Ram Jam. And Elton John, Crocodile Rock. So there, have at it.
Dude, no, I think that my first album that I ever listened to in its entirety was Kiss Alive. It's no doubt about it.
It must have been Tyndale, man. You probably were a little shrimpy guy coming over playing stickball with us back in 77, right?
Of course, was that you? Man, of course. Yeah. And you know what's crazy about that is when you think back on it, man, when you think back on those times, people always say they were simpler times, they were easier times. Some of that is true, but I have three teenagers right now, Nestor. I have a daughter is about to turn 18, a son that's turning 17, and a smaller one that's about to turn 15.
God bless you, Mickey. Oh my God.
I'll tell you, I wouldn't give it up for anything in the world.
Your hair looks great, though. I think a lot of silver being there, probably.
I know. People think I diet, and I don't. But I'll tell you, the one thing that that gets me through is watching them. I mean, they're going to have kids one day, and they're going to say, oh, my time was so much easier than yours. And my dad says, you know, his days growing up were much more innocent. And all. And it's just all perspective. And right now, our perspective is things are terrible. But there's also some – and I love the Baltimore positive thing because – there is some amazing stuff happening. There is some great stuff that goes on. And you just have to want to see it. And once you want to see it, you see all of it. And, you know, I'll never give up on this city. I don't know. I'm going to be honest. I don't know if I could raise kids in the city. I don't know if I could. I don't know if I'd feel safe and okay enough to do it. Because when I grew up in the city, it was a different place. I mean, it really was. And drugs were not what they are now. Violence was not what it is now. Political unrest was not what it is now. But I do love the city. I love every part of it. And, you know, guys like you that have been fighting for it the whole time, guys like me that have never turned my back on it, I think we'll figure it out. And I think it's just a matter of time and getting the right people. I mean, I don't know how close you followed this story, but, you know, the two Mosbys buying $1 million worth of houses, you know, and then now they're surprised that people are asking questions like, you know, it's just a weird time. And I've always said that it's, you know, I don't think the city's corrupt. I think the system's corrupt. And it's hard to deal in a system that's full of corruption without being corrupt. And that's a shame.
Mickey Coachella is my guest. I'm his guest. I'm on his couch. He's on my couch. I'm not even sure. Last thing for I'm going to leave you with this because we'll get together again and we lingered longer. I'm going to wind up. This will wind up being 2 hours of radio. But crab cakes. You know, I mentioned Coco's a minute ago. I haven't had a Coco's crab cake in 20 years. I'll get over there. I know the family, all that. You know, I do business with Costas and Fadley's. Have for many, many years. They ship all over the world. I'm going to let you in on something I'm doing. You know, if anybody makes it an hour into this, you know, good for them. Right. I'm going to be doing a crab cake tour, and I'm going to start eating crab cakes on Fridays next month for the rest of my life, essentially. Right. And I'm going to try to bring people like you along, maybe some chefs, some celebrities, some friends, a politician, community people. But I feel like, and I literally mean this, I think I could find the next 5 years 250 places across the city and maybe across the region, the state, if you stretch out a little bit, that love their crab cake. And then when you walk in, like if I walk in and see Brian Eater over at the Chaucer and I say, who's got the best crab cake? He's like, I do. I was with my friend Dave Shinen the other night, who is raising his family, beautiful family, Butcher's Hill, which is neighborhood's beautiful, looks better than it's ever looked. And he said, go to Duda's down the street. And then, I, you know, so all these places that like, I'm not talking about Pappas or G&M. Well, I'll get there, okay? I mean, those will be the first 10 you do because everybody does them, right, and whatever. Yeah. I'm looking for places that have a crab cake they're proud of.
Yeah.
I bet Liberatore's has a crab cake. I don't know, but maybe. Yeah, I'm just thinking names of restaurants that I haven't even – but, like, Greenmount Station is unbelievable up in Hempstead. So I'll get out to these places that have been sponsors. I mean, Michael's has sponsored me. They have a great crab. So I have all these places I could talk about their crab cake. Yeah. Give me a place or two that maybe you got a crab cake because the guy, the owner said, hey, Mick, you got to try. And you ate it and you're like, all right, you know, or a place I haven't mentioned already. And I've already given you 20. Right.
I know. I don't know if you mentioned Casa Mia's.
I did not. There you go.
Casa Mia's is an incredible
shout out to Joe. There you go. Yeah. Thank you. All right.
Casa Mia's is awesome. I love their crab cake. I got to be honest. You want to do something interesting. Open this thing up to people's home recipes, Nestor. Some of the greatest crab cakes I've ever had came from somebody's kitchen. And you're just like, wow. You know, a girl I dated, her father, the Carmen family, they used to have a place called Carmen's, I think it was Carmen's Crab House down in near Ocean City, has the greatest crab cake I've ever had in my life. And it's a family.
And you're still talking about it.
Yeah. I mean,
how many times have you eaten it in your life?
50.
Oh, you have access to it.
Well, I used to.
How does that make you feel when you don't? Yeah, you grew up near Angelina's, right? So I was in Angelina. Angelina's was a special.
I grew up across the street, literally, from Coco's.
Were they making them in your shot in the 70s?
Not in the 70s. That started in about the, I want to say the mid to late. I was probably a
teenager.
Teenager to young adult when that really became huge. But it is an unbelievable. Only reason I didn't bring it up was because you did. But it is a phenomenal crack.
So I would just say this, all right? And I told my wife this, and she kind of had a, you know, like in her mind, she was thinking this through. I said, honey, I probably had 20 places where I got a crab cake in Dundalk as a kid.
Sure.
That we got either on the bus line, walked to, and legitimate places. Like, let's start with from where I live, from where you're sitting. I grew up two blocks away. From where you're sitting, Ross's Crab House, the Corral Inn, A1 in Essex, Al Seafood, Jimmy's in Dundalk. Let's see here. The Crab Net down on Merritt Boulevard. Schultz's Crab House in Essex. So right there, I just gave you like maybe a dozen from my childhood. And I haven't made it off of Eastern Avenue or North Point. I didn't even give you Costas. I'm trying to think of – I'm just in my mind going like where Drug City is, by the way, shout out. But there were places.
What was the restaurant right at, Dundalk Avenue and Eastern? Was that Michael's?
Oh, yeah. By the circle, on the back end of the circle. Yeah. I took my ninth grade prom date there, and we had a crab cake. Hi, Stephanie. How are you? And we haven't even made it to Greektown. By the way, somebody in my life, you know how you talk to people, they told me to go to Ikaros. They said Ikaros has the best crab cake. Like, dude, this is going to be glorious, right? And I haven't even made it off the east side of town, let alone like somebody's gonna call me from Anne Arundel County or wherever and shout at Timbuktu and like we're all these places. I think this is gonna be my new thing, and you're gonna have to come and have a crab cake every couple months with me somewhere.
I'd love to, dude. There's about 20 places in Pasadena alone. Like, it's unbelievable. You know, and
well, maybe
and
we do a month down there for, you know, whatever the cause is that the, you know, what I don't know. Dude, I'm going to be pooping a lot of crab, all right? You follow me around in a little bag, all right?
Master, I love talking to you, man. I do.
Mickey Coachella used to be a comedian. We'll see if he's still funny. You know, you have to earn yourself every day, right?
I try to do it, man. I try to do it. Yeah.
Anybody throwing tomatoes at you lately? I mean, is there a night where you're just like a starting pitcher that can't get out of the first inning?
No.
That would always be my worry, man. When the radio segment sucks, I just go to break and go to the bathroom and just say, you know, rainbows ahead. But, man, you're on stage 12 minutes in, the crowd hadn't drank enough, or everybody's pissed off because the drinks are warm. I mean, I don't know, man.
The way I look at it, if you look at it as a baseball analogy, I got to pitch the whole nine innings because there's no bullpen. And sometimes I'm going to win, you know, we're going to win 50-0. And other times we might win 50-49, but I'm going to win. So that's the way I look at it.
I told my wife I do 4 hours a day of live radio for 16 years, right?
Right.
And then
right.
whatever this thing I do now is, which isn't live radio because I get to pee whenever I want, but I still, dude, I want you to see that I have not finished. To honor you, I did not finish my cheat. You want some chia seed pudding? Have you ever had chia seed pudding? Seriously, I'm asking. Have you never had it?
It's hilarious.
Dude, this has got coconuts in it, man. Organic.
Next time we're together.
I've been on the air so long with you, I curdled my damn milk. It's a good thing I got a deal with Wise, man.
Go fix your food, buddy.
My apologies to Wise Markets. I said we were having intelligent conversations around here.
Master, thank you.
I got a million of them. I'll be playing out. Give the website again here. FPX Events. FPX Events.
You can go, fpxevents.com. You can also go to Facebook and just go to FPX Events and check out what's going on. It's really awesome, and we're really excited. Nestor, thanks so much for having
me, man.
Mickey's
got to go homeschool his kids. All right, see you later, Mickey. There he goes.
Thanks, brother.
Mickey Coachella, Short Mick, and Mickey, and FPX Events. And I'm going to pull that up for everybody to take one more look at this beautiful theater here.
Thank you, buddy.
For a magical experience. Mickey's out. I'm Nestor. We are WNST.net, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking long segments with Mickey Coachella in Baltimore Positive.